Hello everyone, welcome to Bantering the Blue Shirts. As always, I am Tom Ertz Jr., and I'm joined by Mike Murphy. And I think I said a couple of words there backward, but how's it going, Mike?
Going well. Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving came and went. Black Friday came and went. Still standing, and got to have a very responsible and safe Thanksgiving, which I was grateful for. And still, I'm wondering why I don't eat stuffing pretty much every week. Why is it such a seasonal thing? But I do love me some crispy stuffing, Tom. It hits the spot.
So, for Thanksgiving dessert, are you a pie person?
I'm not a pie person. I just didn't grow up in a family that was big on pie.
Gotcha. So, if you had your choice, though, which pie would you have had if you didn't have one at Thanksgiving?
Oh, Jesus Christ. To fit Thanksgiving, it's either apple or pumpkin. And frankly, I think pumpkins had too much time in the sun, so I'll go with apple.
I'm a big apple pie fan, although like I've f seen that pumpkin and sweet potato pie apparently are the two favorites for Thanksgiving. I don't know why that is, 'cause apple pie is great on any occasion, but I'm just me.
Yeah, I haven't done sweet potato pie, but apple pie is good enough that McDonald's bastardized it, so.
Yeah, and they changed it. Like they used to deep fry them, but I feel like they stopped doing that with like less than 2 years ago, where now they bake them, although they have since added an apple fritter to the mix, which it's pretty damn good. Calories be damned. But
This
who's
isn't the
counting
America I
anyway?
grew up in. Can't deep fry our apple pies anymore. What sort of a country is this?
Yeah. So yeah, we're talking about food and stuff, and this is a hockey podcast. So I figure now is as good a time as any to try and right the ship, if you will. So we're in that kind of weird time, like we say it every so often. It's like summer, but it's not summer, although. As we record this on December 1st, it was kind of unseasonably warm today, but it then dipped down as the day is going on. But where we are is that the NHL wanted this season to start on January 1st, so a month from today, but they don't have any sort of arrangement yet, partially because they kind of want to go back on the agreement they made with the players going back to return to play. They're looking for $300 million more dollars to compensate for the whole no fans in the stands and the truing up of hockey-related revenue and escrow and all this nonsense. It's not looking too promising, Mike.
No, it's looking a little grim at this point. The fact that it's been radio silence between the PA and the league for over a week, really. I think, I read a couple places that, it wasn't surprising that things went quiet over Thanksgiving, but it is, thinking about when the league had, its projected start and where we are now, and, quite frankly, Gary Bettman and the league aren't really negotiating from a position of strength. The players know what the reality is here, but they had an agreement, and it's going to be interesting to see just how much this tangles things up. I think everyone knows we want hockey. Both sides want there to be a season, pretty much regardless of what it looks like, just because. The economic ramifications boils down to, well, something is better than nothing, even if it means no fans and all of that. The problem is, as you know, Tom, you and I have been talking about this for half a year now, more than half a year now, is it's just so incredibly difficult to predict where this pandemic is going to go. And as all of our listeners, I'm sure, know, the numbers just keep getting worse. This is simply not being contained. It's out of control. And, a lot of the projections the NHL may have made after wrapping up the playoffs, when the Lightning won the Cup was, we're looking in hindsight, like, you know, I mean, with the gift of hindsight, yeah, it's a little ambitious to hope for a smooth transition to January 1st, but you know, that's the nature of the beast here. It's really, really goddamn hard to figure this all out. And, you know, we in previous shows, we had talked about how, you know, they're trying to think about things like, you know, temporary realignment and doing like a Canadian division and all those things. But we're not even, like, we're not even in the starting block here in terms of getting to the season. Like, we need dates and times. We need a training camp. Like, we need things to fall into place. And if that doesn't happen soon, like I said, it's starting to look pretty grim.
One of the funniest things about this whole situation, and not so much that it's funny, and this is from the Toronto Star. It's under the subheading of Neither Side is Happy. So it goes, Bettman sprung the MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, on the Board of Governors, who unanimously endorsed it. It's believed some voted merely on Bettman's recommendation. Now, having subsequently read the Memorandum of Understanding after it passed, some are unhappy with it. So, the owners, they don't read the Memorandum of Understanding.
How is that possible?
Like, you know, I'm not surprised because I just feel like we see so many stories these days with like rich people or people in business that like they make some decision and it's like, well, did you read the contract? And it's like, me personally, no, that's what I have people for. And like, if this was a case of like Gary Bettman sort of like, you know, sneaking one by the owners, that would be kind of hilarious because obviously Bettman gets the rep of being this guy that he's all he does is he's doing the bidding of the owners and, you know, always looking to turn the screws to the players. But having said read that, it kind of, to me, it's like, well, maybe this explains why the negotiations went relatively smoothly to get return to play back underway. It's interesting because you would think that the league could figure this out. And the other thing is I also kind of don't buy in it. So the figure here, it says it'll probably cost each team at least around $150 million, all figures US, to operate without fans for a season, factoring payrolls, travel costs, team employees, league dues, all that. I think that's a number on the high end, probably looking at, let's just take a number for like the Rangers or the Leafs or the Canadiens, three of the richest teams according, I think, to Forbes's list and all of that fun stuff. But it's to me, it's kind of simple. The players really don't have to do anything. They made the initial agreement, and I understand that, yeah, you might have to make some tweaks to get things worked out, but they're already deferring money. The league wants them to defer more, and then if they don't defer more money, then there's a shortfall on truing things up, which screws up escrow. Just a lot of financial mumbo jumbo that in any given year, it's hard to, you know, wrap your arms around it, but let alone we're looking at a potential partial season, and a lot of it hinges on if we can get fans in the stands at some point. So just kind of an update there. And I don't really think that there's much more to say about that. We've talked about this topic, you know, for the past couple of shows in some form of detail. This week will obviously be crucial, like we've said in weeks prior, to see if they can get to the bargaining table and just sort of talk, open up lines of communication. But what I did want to talk about next is a league that does seem to have its head on straight. And then that's the NWHL, who announced that they're going to have, I don't know if I'd call it specifically a bubble, because I don't know if it's going to be as locked down as Toronto and Edmonton were, but they're going to be having their season in Lake Placid.
Yeah, it's interesting because we had Melissa Burgess of the Victory Press and Die by the Blade on the show recently, and I kind of posed the question to her whether or not we could see the NWHL doing something like a bubble, and she and I were both skeptical, and I still think kind of rightfully so, just because of the nature of what player salaries look like, how players would become available, how do you do it, and the solution that the NWHL came to is essentially to just kind of do a world championship wherein you have your six teams, each team plays every other team once, and then you have that as your regular season. What's kind of peculiar, Tom, is that you have your six teams, and then what they're going to do is instead of just having the teams with the four best records, and or the tiebreakers being goal differential or regulation wins or what have you, they're going to do a separate kind of stage, like a little bit like the play-in for what the NHL did, where it's all about determining seeding. So the top four teams will play each other once more again, meaning we're going to have more NWHL playoff games than ever before, actually. And then from there, you have your Isabel Cup semifinal and final, and the league has these one-game eliminations. But as you said, like some people are, pointing out, it's like it's not necessarily a true bubble, but it's a bubble for all intents and purposes. Meaning, it's at a remote location. There's going to be testing. It's being done in a way that is, obviously inspired by what the WNBA and professional women's soccer have done, as well as the NHL and the other leagues that were wise enough to bubble up. And it's the obstacle I saw, and Melissa's kind of foresaw, is how does a league that has to count its pennies, frankly, pull something like this off? But it looks like they could do it. The thing that's kind of wacky is that this is going to be starting on January 25th, and then it's all these games are going to take place across a 2-week span in Lake Placid. So it's going to be this mad dash of professional women's hockey, and I don't know, it's going to be very different. And it just makes me think of how sloppy all of the NHL teams looked in the play-in, and the play-in series. Like, it was like, oh wow, this was we really missed hockey, but this is a little rocky. So it'll be interesting to see how, teams are already practicing now, so that should help that in a big way. But yeah, I can't believe it's gonna happen, and it looks like all signs are pointing to it happen. I think at the moment, it's 95% of the players who signed contracts will be playing. Players are getting paid their full salary, which is a great thing, and if they opt out, they still get paid their full salary. So it is pretty big hockey news in terms of, we don't know for sure what's going to happen in the NHL, but the professional women's side of things is on course to have a season. I still hesitate to call it a season because it feels more like a tournament, but it is technically a season.
So I'm really excited about it. I went to, and I tweeted about this, I went to Lake Placid in 2012. That's where the NCAA held the Division III championships, so the semifinal and final. At that time, I was a student at Oswego. Oswego made it to the final where they lost, interestingly enough, and I didn't realize the connection until my brother started going to Norwich, but Norwich University in Vermont, where he goes, that team, they actually played Oswego in the semifinal, and we beat them. And one of the guys who was on that team, he's now a coach. I think like a graduate assistant coach, or he's a coach for Norwich. And he gives my brother shit about it, like, oh, your brother and his going Oswego beating us. But Lake Placid itself, the area is really nice. obviously they held the 1980 Winter Olympics there, Miracle on Ice. When I went in 2012, I believe that the Herb Brooks Arena, which is where the famous Miracle on Ice game was played, it was still mostly as it was. If I'm remembering correctly, since that point, they've made some upgrades to the arena, and terms of seating and stuff like that. But one of the things that I think will be beneficial for this is, and I'm not sure the logistics of how it's going to work, but the sight lines are perfect for broadcasting. So theoretically, if you're able to have the personnel, the equipment, and the infrastructure, you could stream these games, and they're going to look great. I know that's been a complaint by people in the women's hockey community, the media, some of the games that quality streams, some of the international tournaments, it's the equivalent of watching beer league games through, I think it's like rink cams or whatever.
Like a doorbell cam.
Yeah, exactly.
The IIHF, yeah. It comes with the reality of you're playing in smaller rinks, right? Like you're playing in practice facilities of NHL teams and college hockey rinks, and a lot of times that means these were ice surfaces and arenas that were not put together with the intention of broadcasting. For example, last year, the Riveters in the rink in Monmouth Junction, which they're no longer at, they literally set up the broadcast camera in the bleachers, among the fans, and that was just the nature of it. And you look at it and you're like, oh geez, this is pretty rinky-dink Mickey Mouse stuff, but it's the reality of operating on a pretty tight budget. But it is no fans for the upcoming season in Lake Placid. And like you said, it's going to be a big deal that they stream the games. And for those who are curious, the NWHL streams all of its games for free on Twitch. So one way or another, we'll have some hockey to watch. Hopefully, if it's safe, NHL hockey as well. But we're not going to count the chickens just yet.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be cool, and obviously the teams that are going to participate in this, they're going to be wearing some really cool jerseys too. I know yesterday was a couple of really nice reveals.
A couple of them are gorgeous. Yeah, a couple of them are absolutely gorgeous. I still, in season one, the NWHL did something really cool, which is every player had their country of origin, their flag was on one of their shoulders. It was such a simple but cool thing, and every fan I've ever talked to, every member of the media, every player loved it, and they haven't come back since. That's my only gripe with the jerseys, is that they could have had the grand slam instead of they just had the walk-off home run with the jersey designs. The Minnesota home jersey is so
amazing.
Good. It makes their jersey they've had the last couple of years, their black jersey, because before this year, every team really just had one jersey. Now that there's six teams, they're going to have home and aways, but I'm sure also it will help with merchandise sales without selling tickets, that hopefully they're hoping their merch sales can offset some of the money they lost. But that Whitecaps home jersey in the NWHL, the white jerseys are the home jerseys. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. Teams need to take more chances, Tom, with creative design in hockey jerseys. Like we saw, we got to talk a lot about the retro, reverse retros, and you saw some teams really take chances, and a lot of times that worked out, and sometimes, just they were kind of aping a chance they took a long time ago. Like the one that pops into my head immediately is the Canucks with that gradient thing, And it's that was maybe creative and different, 20 years ago. it's not the same. So to see some kind of creative designs, especially the Whitecaps jersey, I really like the Riveters jersey too, is really fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Riveters have always had good jerseys, and correct me if I'm wrong, but at some point, because I know that they had some sort of partnership with the Devils, and when they were playing in Newark, did at some point, was they changed the name only, or was it they had jerseys where the scheme sort of reflected that
Well,
somewhat part?
they were the New York Riveters. Then they moved to the Prudential Center in Newark, the Devils' practice facility, and they changed their jersey and adopted essentially Devils' colors. And they also became the Metropolitan Rivers and have been ever since. Although they have been in New Jersey ever since being in Brooklyn that first year. So they did do that. But what's cool is their new road jersey kind of is a throwback to what the original jersey looked like, which, according to many Riveters fans, was the best of the bunch. So it's another fresh-looking jersey. I like it. I think the Whales look is nice. I like the Buttes are doing something different, going with a black jersey, and yeah, it's fun. I mean, when you look at what the NWHL had for its jerseys, like, I mean, they saw fewer pitches, but they seem to have a higher batting average than what we saw with the NHL reverse retros. Just as you and I remember saying to you, like, Tom, we're not going to walk through each and every one, and I'm pretty sure we did. But yeah, it's fun. We can't have hockey right now, so you can tell we get excited about jerseys that we may or may not get to actually see on the ice. But hey, that's the reality of shit.
Yeah, and I think that you can all it's fun to experiment. It's fun to change things around because I feel like when I was in college, our uniforms we had like our colors were green, white, and yellow, and we would play like most of the team. Well, we were in the Suniac division, so we played like teams in New York, and we had some in other divisions. But like one of the things, all of the jerseys, it always felt like, with the exception of a few teams, they just were like really plain. And like I would think that if you're in the position of you're trying to get, you know, your student body to, you know, buy stuff in the bookstore, or you know, just generate excitement, like little play around, and like that's one of the
Take
things.
chances.
Yeah.
We need to see teams take chances with this stuff, because I'm sure a lot of teams where you're like, oh, we don't want to look like a goddamn, like NFL Europe team or an XFL team, like with a really wacky jersey. But like, you think about teams that go out on a limb a little bit, and like, you can still do stuff that is like the Whitecaps jersey is such a strong example of, yeah, why hasn't anyone done something like that before? And it's such a clean, unique look, and it's not too over the top, but it's different. And like, in some ways, I was kind of let down by, like, I like the Kraken's logo, but their jersey to me, I was just like, eh. Or at least the mock-ups I've seen, I should say. But like, I want so badly for us to see fun designs in the NHL that are not just like, oh, these are the jerseys they're gonna wear, five or four home games out of the year. But anyway, enough jersey talk.
Yeah, enough jersey talk, and you know, enough talk
I
for now.
gotta have a debate with you, Thomas.
Yes, we are gonna have a debate, but now is a good time to help pay some bills, and we'll take an ad break, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're gonna make up. I think we're gonna go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Thank you.
just like that, we're back from the break. We wanted to end the show with like a little fun discussion that sort of branched.
Fun.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I'm here for blood.
It's a branch off of the reverse retro conversation, basically because when they were being teased, and I'll admit, you know, I bought into the hype a little bit, it kind of looked like maybe they were teasing that Mika Zibanejad was going to be the captain because you had the flowy hair, but then as we all know, it was just the model that they used, and it wasn't him. So... there's been a lot of talk, obviously. The Rangers have not had a captain since Ryan McDonagh was traded. And you kind of think by now maybe they would have one. And there seems to be a couple of opinions out there, and two of which I think are the most popular, one involving Mika Zibanejad and one involving Chris Kreider. So... I'm going to let Mike start this, and then I will give my opinion, and then we'll be able to rebut back and forth.
I actually wanted to ask you really quick, just in your opinion, I think this is pretty strictly a two-horse race. Do you think there's any other horse in this race? Like, do you think Trouba is a dark horse for this, or like Panarin? I just don't see it.
No, I think it's firmly a two-horse race. And one of which I think would make sense for two reasons, which I'll obviously get into when it's my turn.
I was just curious about, like, you know, to kind of walk people into this. I wrote something on the banter about this where I was kind of breaking down why the Rangers had two very strong candidates for captain in Zibanejad and Kreider. But as those of you know, like, I... would like Mika Zibanejad to be the captain. I think he's a really exceptional player. He's an incredibly valuable player to the team. I think he's an incredibly thoughtful guy, a smart guy, a guy who seems to be someone who can kind of be the solar system in the locker room. And I will concede all of those points to you, Tom. You won't even have to debate those things to me. But here's the thing. Chris Kreider is locked up. Chris Kreider's a homegrown Ranger. Chris Kreider's an American Ranger. And we all know that this organization kind of likes their American captains. The other thing that is more important to me is that he is like kind of demonstrated as a young, you know, he's now a veteran. I think we can safely say now that he's on the cusp of 30. But like this is a guy who we saw take Pavel Buchnevich under his wing and... really work with Pavel Buchnevich, and you think of Buch walking past the cameras. What was the time where he was like number four, number whatever, like in terms of the NHL trade board, and like you know him telling Buch like to shut up and put his fingers down. But you see all those little things, and you also know that this is a guy who like commands not just the respect of his teammates in the locker room. But he's widely respected around the league for his dedication to the game, like his dedication to like his. Chris Kreider is talked about as if he's like this Adonis that is carved out of marble in terms of how unbelievable his strength and conditioning is. Like that doesn't mean you're a good captain, that you have, you know, a really low BMI and you're in tremendous shape, but it does speak to how dedicated you are, and I think. The coaching staff and the front office likes all of those things a lot. They like that guy who, when he's not saying things to the other guys in the locker room, he's doing the things where you're like, oh shit, maybe I need to do this. Or look at what Kreider is doing. He also has that affability that makes him a relatable guy, which, you know, like we saw unforgettable celebrations with Zuccarello and everything. But in some ways that might kind of counters the strike against him, but it feels like he kind of became, at least to me, like there's a different sensibility about him after the, you know, the big yard sale of everyone, Zuccarello included, where he kind of just put his nose to the grindstone and just worked his ass off. And like it's obvious that Zibanejad's the better player, but and you know he's more important to the, you know, present and future success of the team. But I think Kreider is the intangible guy that the coaches like. And to me, what's more important is I think he serves as a valuable bridge between, you know, he's a guy who was in New York when this team was a contender, when this team was a team that went on deep playoff runs. And Zibanejad was just kind of here for the tail end of that. That plus, like, the mentorship he's demonstrated. And I think something that doesn't get talked about enough is that Chris Kreider is humble and engaging and fantastic with the media. Like, truly among the best guys on the team. Like, Ryan Strom stands out to me as a guy who's great to the media. But Chris Kreider, like, in every end of the season post-mortem, you know, when guys head off for the offseason, Kreider has always blown me away with how he speaks about his game, where the team is. Like, even when he was a younger guy, he's a guy who just seemed kind of wise beyond his years. And when you're in a market like New York, that sort of thing matters, that you can kind of speak eloquently and speak to what's going on in the locker room and, you know, what you expect of yourself and of your teammates and the team. And, you know, there's some common ground there with him and David Quinn as well. There's a lot of little things that make it feel like, yeah, it kind of should be Chris Kreider. And that's kind of where I'm leaning right now. Like I said, I'd like Mika Zibanejad. I'd like him to be the captain. But I think it should be Chris Kreider.
So here's why it shouldn't be Chris Kreider. Number one, you bring up the point that he's locked in. That I understand that. But when I look at Chris Kreider, I look at that contract, and I look at what it's going to turn into. The first thing I think of is a former Rangers captain and current assistant general manager, Chris Drury. Chris Drury, obviously, great NHL player. He has
the Sabres, great.
Yep. Well, and also the heroics of, you know, in the playoffs when he was kind of like a role player with the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, the up and coming guy. Yeah.
Yeah, and he signs the big deal with the Rangers. And you know, God bless him, he gets the money that he could. But it was a deal that from the moment it was signed, everyone's side eyeing. It's like, really? Okay, we can kind of understand why the Rangers gave that money to Scott Gomez, because he's more of a skilled player. Yeah. He fits a need for them. But, like, Chris Drury is this guy who really had a couple of career years playing on a talented Buffalo Sabres team. Not to say that he was simply a passenger, but that team had some other players who helped Drury do some things. And I feel like if you give the captaincy to Kreider, you're going to have this situation where you have a guy that is going to be overpaid really soon. In the hierarchy of this team, he's going to be a third liner before you know it, because you have Panarin, you have Lafreniere. So unless he's switching positions to right wing, which the Rangers have tried that on a few occasions, and he's never really seemed to like it. And it's been this, we can move him to the right, but it just never sticks. So that's number one. You're going to have the pressure of the captaincy. You're going to have him being overpaid. And I just wonder if that's something that, like we've seen with other players, other captains, that's going to create contempt with the fan base. Now, the difference here is that previous contempt for captains, like obviously Drury was brought in, while McDonough never played an NHL game prior to joining the Rangers, he was still acquired. He wasn't, you know, drafted, wasn't homegrown. So he was still someone that wasn't, it was a little bit different, although it really doesn't make sense to me because he came up through Hartford and then obviously made it in New York. So you have that. And I just think that if you pick Zibanejad, you're covering your bases, whether he's here for two more years or he's here for more than 2 years, because if he's only here for two more years, he's the captain this year, he's the captain next year. And then if ultimately they decide not to re-sign him, if they decide to trade him, it's a guy that he obviously deserves it. He's become the face of the team. He's one of their most promoted players. You can see it through their social media. They do all these things where they're putting him front and center, using him as a mouthpiece, promoting things. So it seems like in that regard, he's well adjusted, he's well spoken, and he can handle that part of the job. I think that the fact that the Rangers have not really had a lot of Europeans in leadership roles, you could have Zibanejad break the mold there. Obviously, the makeup of the team, you have a lot of different players from across the globe. So having someone that's more representative of the makeup of the team would be cool. And then, like I said, if he's only here for 2 years, that then allows the team to have options if they feel that there is captain potential in some of their younger players, whether it be an Adam Fox, whether it be a Capo Caco, whether it be an Alexis Lafreniere, that at that point in time, okay, we had a captain, they're gone. Then it creates this sort of natural time of, well, we're not going to replace someone right away. We're going to maybe wait a year or two. And at that point, one of those younger players is older, matured, and ready to step into that role. And then the team puts their stamp on them. It's, this is our leader, our young player who's going to be with us for hopefully the next decade and beyond. With Kreider, theoretically, you could do that. But do you want a situation where he's your captain, things go sour, he's not playing as much, and then they trade him, and then it's like, well, now we're picking another captain, where in Zibanejad's case, it's more transactional, like, hey, we weren't able to re-sign him, or he was looking for too much money, and we decided to go in another direction, type of thing. But that's just how I look at it. I think you can cover both bases, where you're really, if you ch pick Kreider, you're hitching your wagon to that guy, and then you're maybe boxing out some other leaders in the organization.
That's a fair point. I do think there, I feel like there is something to be said about that. But I think in some ways that also kind of works in Kreider's favor. I also think that if anyone could kind of handle the, oh, Chris, you're on the third line and whatever. Like the Rangers haven't shied away from having guys in leadership roles that, mostly we've seen them be, alternate captains, but I don't think that is something that would make the Rangers kind of balk and be like, oh shit, we have two better left wingers than Chris Kreider. I also think it would be pretty shocking to see him, like to see his contract come under the same kind of criticism as Drury's. It's kind of circumstantial in that the Rangers have those other left wingers. But the thing that stands out to me is the Rangers don't give out the C lightly, which is why we've had this gap since Ryan McDonagh left the team. And, part of that is because the guys who, you trace the dots back, before McDonagh, you had Callahan. Before Callahan, you had Jágr. And then you had Messier. And then Leitch, then Messier, right? So, like, that is a pretty exceptional chain. And to be the next link in that chain is a big deal. And I think we're seeing that, that next link in the chain start to be forged here. And I feel like it is obviously this two-horse race, but I mean, the other option here is that it just doesn't happen this year yet. And that might be because they're curious about whether or not these kids could be someone might step up from that group. But there are a couple things to keep in mind. For instance, like, just because a guy is signed for 7 years, that doesn't mean he'll be here for 7 years. Also, we've seen teams take away the captaincy from players in the past. I'm not saying it's a good thing, and in New York it would be an absolute media circus, but I look at how much more you'd have to probably pay Zibanejad if you put the C on his jersey, and you might be pricing him out of New York, which is something maybe to keep in mind. But I agree with a lot of your points. I still think you're wrong. I think
it's fine.
The guy who it should be, I think, is Kreider. But the guy I want it to be as a writer and as a fan is Zibanejad. I think that's the better story. Because, like, the thing you said that really had me nodding my head was, yeah, like, the idea of him being, you know, a Swedish-Iranian player, and, you know, other than Jager, there's no other European captain of this team, and he kind of represents the team. Furthermore, he's a younger guy, and Kreider's a little further down the road, and, you know, there is this sense that, like, the team has been kind of moving in the right direction since that Zibanejad trade, right? Like, that was kind of the big thing we all point to of, like, oh, yeah, they got younger for once, and they somehow got better in the same stroke. But, yeah, I feel like you have a lot of strong points, Tom. I just feel like my gut tells me they'll pick Kreider. And, like, thinking of it from the intangibles, the leadership stuff, the things he's demonstrated, I think Mika's pretty soft-spoken. I think he's also very good with the media and very bright. But I think Kreider brings a lot of those things that, like, front offices and coaches just absolutely fucking love. And, you know, there's might be some question about whether or not Zibanejad has as many of those leadership qualities, which, you know, who's to say? I think the guys in the locker room know better than anyone. But both of them were alternate captains last year. But the fact of the matter is the Rangers lost Henrik Lundqvist, who was, you know, as we know, kind of the de facto captain. They lost Mark Stahl. They lost Jesper Fast. That's a lot of leadership out the window. So, I mean, I think we'll see Jacob Trouba wearing an A, and Kreider or Zib wearing an A, and then the other, whichever one doesn't have an A, will have a C. It'll be very interesting to see how it shakes out, because really it's not to read too much into it, because I know a lot of people are like, who the fuck cares? I'm sure a lot of our listeners are like, they're going on yeah. and on about this, right? But it does kind of, you think about it from marketing, you think about it from team identity, like what direction the team wants to go in. And like you said, it feels like the Rangers have really been putting Zibanejad in a spotlight, even before like the 5-goal game and all the like the sexy stats and everything. Like, they really like Mika Zibanejad. The thing is, I think they also deeply love Chris Kreider.
You talk about marketing. I think the
Zibanejad's the better marketing play, I think.
But, well, yeah, but yeah. If we're being 100% completely honest, in their heart of hearts, I think that they would love if the next time that the Rangers are hoisting the Stanley Cup, it's Alexis Lafreniere getting it first. The first overall pick, first time in franchise history, being this symbolic of the team decided to rebuild, get younger. They were rewarded with a number one overall pick, and here he is hoisting the ultimate prize is a stamp of they did things the right way, and it paid off. That I think, like, if you're trying to write like a Hollywood ending for this rebuild, I think that's what they picture. Like, here's the guy that we got, number one overall, mostly because of luck, but in part because they decided we are going to rebuild, we are trading some players away, we're not going to be really that good, and like that would be like a tremendous story, and it would kind of be. In the context of the modern NHL, I think it would be kind of cool that it's like, here is this storied franchise that they haven't won since 1994. Before that, they hadn't won since 1940. Here's them making new history as a franchise, and if all goes well, they're going to contend for a number of years. But I don't know if you get that necessarily if you make Chris Kreider your captain. But who knows? I could be wrong.
It's a very, very fair point. The final thing I'll say is that the Rangers have a ton of ties to USA Hockey and Team USA. And Chris Kreider is like a Team USA boy, and I think, like, it is. You look back at the chain. You think of Leach. You think of Callahan. You think of McDonough. In terms of recent captains, you think of like how marketable those guys are, and Chris Kreider has been a fan favorite for a long time. He's also been a darling of the media in terms of interviews for a long time, and yeah, there's a lot of the thing is like if we're putting like little chips, like or like little poker chips into your pile and my pile for all the good reasons, it's kind of even. Like it's a toss up, right? But I don't want to see them do a co-captain thing, like not to bring up Chris Drury again, but like Drury and Briere and Buckley,
yeah,
remember that? Like that to me is just like the worst. Like just have one. Just make it. Don't have a guy who's captain on the road and captain at home. That's
did Carolina do that recently? Like co-captains? I feel like.
Did they?
I feel like they had co-captains in the within like the last 5 years. I kind of feel like I may be misremembering, but I feel like there was a team
after the Eric Staal trade, maybe.
Yeah, it might have been before. I don't remember the exact timeline of them and when Justin Williams came back to Carolina. Might have been they did that, then Justin Williams came back, then he was the captain, and then when he went on his retirement, then I think Jordan Staal became the captain. But I may be wrong about that. Someone will probably correct me.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I'd be curious to see what most fans think. I think most people are pulling for Zibanejad, and I get it. The thing I'll say to people is don't be surprised if it's Kreider.
Yeah, but I think you hit the nail on the head that this is just, it's like a fun talking point for us, but obviously the players know who the true leaders are, and you don't need a letter to be a leader. So we'll see. I thought it was a little interesting topic. People will make sure to tell us who you think won.
Yeah, they'll say that I won the debate, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, I know. Just like what the Marvel draft and the Duck draft. Oh wait, that went a little different.
Won the Marvel draft. You won the Duck draft. But you also broke every goddamn rule. You had like a fucking goalie playing defense. You're goddamn madman. I'll give you forwards playing D and vice versa, but goalies playing defense? Huh?
It was mere suggestions. No concrete rules were established. I mean, I was creative.
It was not in the spirit of things, and you know it.
Maybe. Maybe not. Who's to say?
I can imagine that you having the smuggest, shittiest look on your face right now. Maybe. Perhaps.
I do. I have a shit-eating grin on, and I'm not afraid to admit it.
But I also do readily admit that you won that, even though I thought I had it in the bag when I got to take Julie the Cat Gaffney. I was like, oh, this is over. He's stuck with fucking Goldberg.
I lulled you into a false sense of security.
You did.
And it's like in Yu-Gi-Oh! It's like, you've activated my trap card.
I also think, to be honest, I think I did a poor job of explaining why Kreider is the better choice, I think. I think
you did a bad...
You hit on all the points of like why I feel like it ought to be Zibanejad. I want it to be Zibanejad because it's the better story. I just think Kreider is he's like the safe play. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what it boils down to us. And Kreider is what I would expect the Rangers to do. Zibanejad's what I hope the Rangers will do.
Yeah, we will certainly see. I think.
You're
if they're
win this one, and it makes me sick.
Well, no, I was saying I would think they would want to have like, I would have thought they would have had a decision by now, considering that the reverse retro jerseys went up for sale. But maybe this is their way of even making more money because you have the initial release go out.
Milk that cow dry.
Yeah, and then we've named a captain. Be sure to get your reverse retro jersey with the appropriate letters. But before Arvid, our lovely patrons who support the show, I have a quarter on my desk, and like you know, for the longest time, like obviously they had the state quarters, and you had the little booklets, and they released them by years.
Yeah.
So now for 2020, there is a National Park quarter, and I'll take a picture of this and I'll send it to you, and I'll probably tweet it out. There's two bats on it, and I think that's awesome.
two bats on it.
Like, there's one bat that's sort of hanging upside down, and then there's a bat right side up, and they're kind of looking at each other. And I don't know if it's like a mama bat and a baby bat, although now that I look at it, I think that's what it is. But I thought that was kind of cool. And it's a really shiny quarter, so I wonder if, like, this was just put into circulation. Because the reason I'm bringing this up is, like, whenever I get loose change, like, whether it's, you know, getting my coffee in the morning, whatever, I literally just throw it into, like, my door jamb. And then every so often, it'll get really full, and if I close the door, it'll spill over. I get a big Ziploc bag, and then I fill it up. So, like, I have a bag on my desk, and, like, this is...
hear it.
That's all the coins.
There's a coin shortage in this country, Tom, and you're hoarding them.
Well, to be fair, when I have the opportunity to give coins, I do. Like, if it's, oh, that'll be 363, I'll go, okay, hold on one second. Like, all right, there's one, there's
you're
two. I need a nickel. All right, do I got any dimes or do I got any? And then it's like, oh, here
you
go.
An old man. Do you have a coin purse? I hope you have a coin purse.
So, I do have, like, a little Ziploc baggy thing. It's not like...
Do you put on a pair of bifocals when you count out the coins?
I don't, although I did go to the eye doctor today, and I got to get new glasses because my astigmatism changed, and it's not...
Son of a bitch.
So, it's like, I was looking at it, and she's like, my doctor, she's like, well, you're confusing P's and F's, and I'm like... Let me put this, like, lens on and now try to read the letters again. And I'm like, oh, wow, that is a lot better. And she's like, yeah, so it's a little slight change. But here I am rambling. But,
it's terrible.
I know. I'm terrible.
My eyes are perfect, so I'm glad to say. I can see through walls.
Well, that's great. Like, I mean, and I had to get my eyes dilated today, which is kind of one of the... it's the weirdest experiences because you can see big things, but when you try to, like, read or look close up, it's like if you've ever had like water on your sunglasses or where it's you
yeah,
can
yeah.
still, but it's just a really weird sensation. It's like I don't recommend it. It's kind of like it can kind of freak you out. But it does serve a purpose because and they're able to take pictures of your eyes and, you know, if you have any, you know, bad things, they can point it out for you and give you corrective lenses and so you can see everything that you're supposed to see.
That's science, bitch.
It is science. And I'm able to ramble on like this because of people like our great patrons who continue to support us month after month, and these individuals include A 6 Foot Gap, Adam Naholik, Aiden Gaspar, Amriel Kistner, Andre Shikagov, Andy White, Anthony Viola, Beezer, Ben Pierney, Bjarner Osterheim, Bob Kawa, Bobby Callahan, Captain America, Chris Abibi, Chris Lucas, Chris Marco Trigiano, Clark Carroll, Daniel Dezen, Frank Menino, George Lippman, Igor Zavlasi, Jamie Bussell, Jason Silverman, Jeff Owen, Jermaine Francis, John Prezepelski, John Reppy, Jordan Sassone, Justin Walsh, Keith Franchillo, Kevin Mead, Kush Tastic, Kyle Napolitano, Matt Bader, Matt Pumple, Matthias Olsen, Michael Kennick, Michael Marcus, Michael Silvers, Nikolai Hoffman, Panarin 2020, Patrick Landholt, Perennial Powerhouse, Sammy Vogel Seidenberg, Sean, Stieg Bjalbach, Stink Flamen, Tall Guy Rob, The Tin Man, Tori from Manhattan, and Trevor Kepner. Thank you again, everyone, for your support. As always, we understand times are tough. We understand it's the holiday season. If at any point you got to drop off, adjust your contribution. We totally understand. We appreciate your support of the podcast, your support of the site. We will try to continue, you know, podcasting on a regular basis. We were off last week, you know, for the holiday and just not much going on. Like we've said to you, we're going to try and have some more guests on. If there are things that you'd like us to talk about, sort of how we had that mini little debate over who the next captain should be, let us know. This show is as much yours as it is ours, and we try to incorporate your suggestions as much as we can.
Yeah, don't be shy to reach out, and hope everyone had a healthy and safe and delicious Thanksgiving. And I mean, here we are, December. Are we going to have hockey again, Tom?
I hope we have some hockey soon.
Maybe we know something for next show. Thanks, yeah. Everybody.
I appreciate you, Mike. I appreciate our listeners. And I'll talk to you again soon. Be well.
Bye-bye.